You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it's our weekly check of the top state news stories with Robert Mentzer from the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. First, when it comes to eating Chinese food, you might be familiar with Sichuan or Cantonese cuisines, as they tend to be the more popular options here in the United States. Less familiar are the flavors from a region south of China's Yangtze River known as Jiangnan. And that's where you'll find some of the best food available in the country, our next guest says. In a new book, she describes the food and cuisine by saying, quote, "I know of no other that can put one's heart so much at ease." Today on Food Friday, we'll dig into this unique style of Chinese cuisine, the ingredients that go into it, and how to make it at home. Fuchsia Dunlop joins us now. She's a chef who's won numerous James Beard Awards. Her new book is Land of Fish and Rice, Recipes from the Culinary Heart of China. Fuchsia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi.
Well, you've traveled extensively through China. You've focused on this particular region, Jiangnan. Am I saying that right?
Jiangnan, yes.
So tell us a little bit about how you fell in love with this this region's cuisine.
Well, I started traveling to Shanghai, which is the best-known city in the region, about sort of 15 years ago. And then I kept sort of returning to other parts of the region. I just kind of fell in love with it. And it was something about, you know, the beautiful landscape in places like Hangzhou, which is known for its West Lake, and this exquisite food. They have a kind of reverence for ingredients there and a way of cooking very gentle food that just makes you feel so relaxed and healthy.
What are some of the flavors we'd find in this kind of cuisine?
Well, one of the best-known styles of cooking there is red braising, Hong Shao, and that's where you use soy sauce and rice wine and sugar to create these rich and opulent gravies. So things like red braised pork is a very well-known Shanghainese dish, or Dongpo pork from Hangzhou, which is named after a Song Dynasty poet called Su Dongpo. That's one style. And there are also drunken dishes made with Shaoxing rice wine, so that have this lovely sort of aromatic fragrance. And then there are lots of dishes which are really about the ingredients. So the kind of values that we think of as sort of modern Californian cooking, and this idea that you want to eat really gorgeous seasonal vegetables and really, you know, excellently sourced meat and fish and so on. And these kind of ingredients, you don't want to sort of cover them in strong seasonings. You want to sort of bring out their natural tastes. So a lot of the cooking here is very fresh and natural, and you use small amounts of things like stock and ginger, scallion or green onion, dried shrimps, maybe a little salt pork or ham, just to magnify those beautiful savory tastes.
And it looks like it isn't about one overpowering flavor in a dish, a really hot dish or a particular seasoning that jumps out. It seems like it's a lot about a balance between the flavors.
It is. It's about a sort of harmonious balancing of flavors, which is not at all to suggest that it's dull, because like any good Chinese meal, a meal in the Jiangnan region has to have a variety to thrill the palate, you know, with some stronger tastes, some milder tastes, refreshing soups. But it is about a harmonious mixing, and it's food that I like to think of Sichuanese is the jazz of the Chinese cooking world with all those kind of electrifying flavors. The food of Jiangnan is like its classical music. So it's very beautiful and sort of harmonious, but it's in a completely different register.
It sounds like that should be complicated to pull off, but looking at a lot of the recipes, a lot of it is, I don't know if I'd say simple, but it's not so complicated that I, for example, wouldn't even touch the recipe.
No, not at all, because you have to remember that, I mean, apart from the fancy food in expensive restaurants, you know, the people of Jiangnan cook at home, and people want to make dishes that are quick and easy and, you know, not overcomplicated. And so I just love the farmhouse cooking and home cooking of this region. So many of the recipes in the book just have a few ingredients and really pretty straightforward to prepare.
We're talking with Fuchsia Dunlop. She's the author of the book Land of Fish and Rice, Recipes from the Culinary Heart of China. Let's get into some recipes now. You shared a couple from the book. We've got these linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Let's start with soupy Chinese cabbage with salt pork. And this is one, this is not a huge ingredient list. This is one I feel like I could pull off at home. Can you talk us through this recipe a little?
Yeah, well, that's the recipe. And this is very typical of the Jiangnan region, because they often do what they call xian xian he yi, creating a unity of fresh and salted ingredients. So they use some strongly flavored salt cured or pickled ingredient with something fresh. In this case, you've got the salt pork and you've got the Chinese cabbage. And what happens is that you have a very light and healthy vegetable, in this case the Chinese cabbage, but you have the richness and deliciousness of the salt pork. And so it's a very simple dish, but the cabbage becomes lovely and silky and ribbony, and you get that rich, savory flavor. So I think with this style of cooking, you can kind of have your cake and eat it. You know, you can eat very healthily, but you have the kind of richness of sort of less healthy, meaty dishes.
Yeah, this is using that pork, or you say you can use unsmoked bacon or pancetta in there. This is using it as a spice, really, a flavor, not as big chunks of meat in the dish.
Yeah, a lot of recipes, I mean, in this region and in Chinese home cooking in general, meat is used more as a flavoring principle than the main deal. So it's actually very economical and very healthy and very kind of sustainable. So I think, you know, for people who want to eat more healthily but still want to enjoy their food, it offers real solutions to the sort of problem of how to eat more healthily but still really feel satisfied by your food.
Now, one thing that surprised me a lot looking through the book is, you mentioned it a couple points, pumpkin is a big ingredient in this region. And we've got a lot of pumpkins out here in Wisconsin that we can cook with right now. Talk about what they do in this province with their pumpkins.
Well, there's one recipe that I really love. I mean, I know Americans really love pumpkin pie, and this is a sweet dish from this region, which is also made with pumpkin. So you can steam your pumpkin till it's really tender, and then mash it up and add some glutinous rice flour, which you can get in any Chinese supermarket, and you make a kind of dough like that. And then you make it into balls, which you stuff with red bean paste. Is a very easy sweet stuffing to find, but you could use other kind of sweet stuffing. You make it into balls, and then you deep fry them. And so you get this lovely, sweet, squidgy, bright orange pumpkin dough with the sweet center, a very delectable sort of dessert dish.
I'm looking at the recipe for these pumpkin cakes. They look amazing. And then there's also a pumpkin bit in the beverage section, pumpkin juice, in a way, a pumpkin smoothie with honey. People drink their pumpkin there.
Yes. Well, they don't have, yeah. I mean,
not just in pumpkin spice lattes, I should say.
Yeah, this is from a recipe from the Dragonwell Manor, a wonderful restaurant in Hangzhou. And there they always have seasonal fruit or vegetable juices. And here you steam your pumpkin and then you blend it until it's like a kind of milkshake consistency and sweeten it with honey to taste. And it's so silky. It's like kind of drinking a sunset.
That sounds fantastic. We're talking right now with Fuchsia Dunlop, author of the new book, Land of Fish and Rice, Recipes from the Culinary Heart of China. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced the cuisine of southern China? Are you from there? Is this part of your family heritage? You can join us at 800-642-1234. And if you need some cooking advice on making Chinese food of various sorts at home, let us know that. Let us know your go-to recipes as well. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. You can find a couple recipes while you're there. We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment. Maybe hear from you here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about Chinese cooking with Fuchsia Dunlop, author of the new book, Land of Fish and Rice, Recipes from the Culinary Heart of China. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you make homemade Chinese food? Is this maybe part of your family heritage, or have you tried to recreate something that you had while traveling, maybe at a restaurant? What questions do you have about cooking particular dishes, working with particular ingredients? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post and get a couple recipes on the Central Time Facebook page. And Fuchsia, big picture, I think when we think of Chinese food here in the United States, an image of Chinese American food at restaurants pops up. What do you think about it? China, obviously a huge country with lots of people. There's a lot of diversity in the food styles there, I imagine.
Oh, it's totally amazing. And really, you know, the kind of Chinese food that you get in America, even now when you can see more regional cuisines than just Cantonese in recent years, you still only see the tip of the iceberg. Because China, as you said, it's a huge country, and it's a country where food has been so important for hundreds or even thousands of years. So every region has its own flavors, its own special ingredients, and its own specialty dishes.
And you wrote a piece recently on 10 tips for cooking with a wok. Now, is it, first of all, is this a region where the wok is a key tool?
Yeah, I mean, the wok is a key tool all over China. Okay. It's really one of the most important pans in implements in the Chinese kitchen.
Let's go to a caller now. We've got Mark on the line in Minneapolis. Mark, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to ask about, Mark?
Yeah, so it's my first time cooking dinner for my family, doing a big old Thanksgiving dinner. And I kind of want to try just a new entree, kind of come at it, you know, instead of just doing the traditional, kind of want to come at it from a different angle. So any ideas for just some out there entrees, either Asian or otherwise, that would be a crowd pleaser?
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. I have counter-programmed Thanksgiving sometimes with my famous Thanksgiving enchiladas. Fuchsia, anything from the new book that would make a good entree or maybe alternate entree on a Thanksgiving table here in the U.S.?
Well, there's one dish which is a real showstopper. I haven't tried it with turkey, but it's the beggar's chicken from Hangzhou. A wonderful dish. You get a whole chicken and you marinate it, and then you stuff it with sort of stir-fried pork and pickles and leek. And then you surround it, traditionally actually, with clay, but I suggest that you can do it with a salt crust pastry. So you first of all, you wrap the marinated stuffed chicken in lotus leaves, which you can get from good Chinese supermarkets. Then you wrap it in pastry and you roast it, first at a high temperature and then at a low temperature. And then when you're ready to eat, you bring it out to table and you offer one of your guests a mallet to smash open the pastry. And inside is this absolutely gorgeous bird, soft and juicy, with the wonderful aroma of the lotus leaves.
Mark, that's a savory showstopper for sure. Give it a try. Send us a picture of the pre and post malleting of that chicken. Let's take a call now from Josh in Kenosha. Josh, hi.
Hi. I was curious. I'm not really too familiar with Chinese food. Is there a good traditional Chinese dish that would be good, a good starter for like someone like me who has more a more American palate? And I'll just take the question off the air.
There are lots of dishes that will suit you very well. There's one dish in my new book, which is the stir-fried chicken with ginger, which is a sort of very simple and very satisfying stir-fry, nothing alarming about it. The lovely fragrance of ginger, sort of very juicy, succulent chicken. So that's a recipe that will teach you some of the basic techniques of stir-frying, not intimidating and with a very delicious result.
Josh, good luck with that. Thanks for that call. We are talking to Fuchsia Dunlop about her new book, Land of Fish and Rice, Recipes from the Culinary Heart of China. Want to get into another recipe that you've shared with us, Fuchsia. We've got this also up on the Central Time Facebook page. I flipped to another one. Oh, here it is. Shanghai noodles with dried shrimp and spring onion oil. Tell us about that one.
Well, that's one of my absolute favorite go-to recipes when I want to have a quick lunch at home. Very, very simple with just a few ingredients. So you need to buy some dried shrimps, which you can get from any Chinese supermarket, and soak them in hot water with a dash of rice wine. When they're nice and plump, then you're ready to go. Then you take a whole lot of scallion, spring onion, green onion, whatever you call them, and you chop them into lengths. And then you fry them in oil, maybe peanut oil or canola or something like that, in a neutral oil. And you fry them until the spring onions are really, really aromatic and going quite brown, and then you put the shrimps in and you fry them for a bit too, and then you end up you've got this oil with the brown spring onions and shrimp, and then you just pour that off. When you're ready to have your noodles, all you have to do is put a little soy sauce in a serving bowl, add some cooked noodles, cooked to your liking, and then add some of this oil with the crunchy bits of shrimp and spring onion, and then mix it all together. And it sounds so minimal, and it is minimal, it's very easy, but it's fantastically delicious. And the great thing about this recipe, which is what I do, is that you can make it in larger quantities and have a jar of this aromatic oil. And then it takes literally 5 or 10 minutes to make a delicious noodle dish for you and your family.
This sounds like it's comfort food, maybe for you in particular.
Oh, yeah.
And is this something that, you make it for yourself, is this something that you've served for large numbers of people as well? Is it a crowd pleaser?
I mean, I've served it to family and friends, and I've also served it at cooking demonstrations and larger events because it's easy and it's surprising and it's delicious.
Are there particular kinds of noodles that are common with this type of cooking?
Well, yeah. I mean, in Shanghai, they would tend to use a sort of a fresh wheat noodle. So the ingredients would just be sort of wheat flour and water. And they sometimes add a little of a sort of alkaline ingredient, which makes them go a bit yellowish and makes the texture a bit more springy. But actually, honestly, I also sometimes make it at home with dried udon noodles, the Japanese ones, or, I mean, I guess you could even try doing it with spaghetti, which would probably be also very delicious.
It seems like there's, looking at a lot of the recipes, it seems like there'd be some pretty easy substitutions that you could get away with in a lot of these.
Yeah, well, some of them, you know, it's like a principle of the recipe. So like when you cook some kind of green vegetable with some dried shrimp or a little ham or pork or something, that you can take that idea, and if you've got a different sort of cabbagey green or whatever, then you can just substitute it in. And in some recipes, I do make suggestions for other substitutions that are very easy to do.
Now, we mentioned those pumpkin cakes earlier. Any other ideas for a good dessert item?
Well, there's a very unusual, I mean, not unusual in China, but maybe unusual to American palates, a lovely sweet soup with little glutinous rice balls in it, with a sort of black sesame stuffing. So that's something very typical of this region, and not as sweet as some American desserts, but with this lovely sort of huggy texture and very kind of refreshing.
Are you going to be getting back to this region for more inspiration anytime soon?
I'm always going back. I can't keep away. I just love it.
What's your latest discovery there as we wrap up, food-wise?
Oh, well, I mean, I was there a couple of months ago, and I had this amazing dish of little fresh river crabs, and it was in a very nice restaurant, and they'd stir-fried the legs with a bit of soy sauce and rice wine and sugar, and they'd also stir-fried the crab meat with ginger and served it in the shell, and it was absolutely exquisite. It's perfectly in season, these little crabs. So nice.
Fuchsia, thanks so much for joining us and sharing all these great inspirations.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was chef and cookbook author Fuchsia Dunlop. Her new book is called Land of Fish and Rice, Recipes from the Culinary Heart of China. We've got links to two of her recipes, soupy Chinese cabbage with salt pork. I think I might try making that one, as well as Shanghai noodles with dried shrimp and spring onion oil. We've got those posted over at the Central Time Facebook page. Terrorist acts by ISIS, fears over national security, and fiery political rhetoric have thrust American Muslims into the spotlight of the 2016 presidential campaign. Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Danielle Kading followed a Muslim family in Superior for a day to see what life is like for them during this campaign season.
How are you doing? You made it.
Yeah. How's your morning going?
It's going.
Ibrahim Al-Kuda, Abe to his friends, doesn't track the campaigns that closely. In fact, he didn't watch the last presidential debate. As a father of four, he's more worried about getting the kids to school on time, studying for school, and keeping on top of the invoices he reviews as a civil engineer for the city of Superior. In a word, he's busy.
I got zero sleep sometimes. Not always and not frequently, but a lot of times, 4 to 6 hours. That's not bad, I guess. I don't know. With four kids and all of this stuff, it's not bad.
The night before, Al-Kuda was installing flooring into the early morning hours at a house he recently bought.
I was working on staining the cabinets. There's the basement that needs to be waterproofed, and that is really a big project.
He receives a text from a visiting friend to let him know he'll be at the mosque for Juma, or Friday prayer. Besides homework and school, Al-Kuda is also the president of the Islamic Center of the Twin Ports. He leads prayers every Friday afternoon, so he heads home early to get ready with the rest of his family.
Hello. We're supposed to be there at 1:30. We are always fashionably late.
That's Al-Kuda's wife, Beth. She's going to school for nursing while taking care of their four kids. She worries about them during this presidential election, especially when Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump came to Superior this past spring.
My daughter is in middle school. I was a little nervous. She wears a scarf, so she's very noticeably Muslim. And I was worried that somebody would maybe say something to her or kind of single her out.
Beth Alcuda already sees her son Leif, who's just 5, shying away from anything that identifies them as followers of Islam.
I don't know if he sees it as Muslim or Arab or different or what it is, but he definitely understands the concept already that he should fit in to what everybody else's concept is.
As the president of the Islamic Center, Abe leads the prayers since smaller communities don't have an imam or Muslim leader. He says some people seem to have a generalized view of Muslims.
Typically, when you say this, people picture somebody who doesn't like the country, who is a terrorist, who could just harm other people, etc. But that's not the truth.
Beth says they're just like any other religious family in America.
We go through phases where we're like, oh, we're really good. We pray 5 times a day. Sometimes we're like the Catholics who only go to Christmas Mass, you know.
But the fear of a religious test or registry when Trump called for
a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States
is a big reason why they're voting for Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. But even Clinton has drawn flack from some Muslims for saying,
we need American Muslims to be part of our eyes and ears on our front lines.
Some say Clinton's rhetoric reinforces Americans' association of Muslims with national security concerns. Like many parents, Abe Alcuda says they just want a better future for their children.
That they don't have to spend so much work and time and energy and stress over this really nonsense when they could just pursue their dreams and just do whatever they want to do in this life and be happy.
So Muslims like them can have their shot at the American dream. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can find all of the WPR News team's election coverage at wisconsinvote.org. And here on Wisconsin Public Radio, we'll have a lot of coverage still to come between now and Election Day and beyond. Join us Sunday afternoon at 2 for The Right to Vote, from freed slaves and women's suffrage to today's debates over voter ID and felon enfranchisement. We trace the wild history of the right to vote in America and explore one of the most basic questions facing our democracy: who may participate? That's The Right to Vote, Sunday afternoon at 2, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Also join us election night Tuesday. We will have live coverage of the elections with analysis and results as they come in. We'll be bringing you state-focused coverage of the state legislative races, congressional districts, U.S. Senate race, and the presidential vote in Wisconsin. And we'll be hearing from NPR with their coverage of the nationwide race for Congress and that whole presidential thing going on, too. That's election night here on the Ideas Network.